afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio, another episode.
another fun-filled afternoon.
We're always having some sort of episode, but you know what? Today, I don't see any foul-ups except for the fact that the chat room appears to not be working. There's always something, you know. Our guest is on a landline.
Okay, not be working is, for those who don't know, it's a brand new website with a completely different chat room format, shall we say, and it's still a work in progress.
It's so, going to be better, just not right now.
Let us know what you think.
But you can't tell us.
But don't tell us what you think right now.
Based upon the response so far this morning, I can almost guarantee you it will get better.
Yeah, because I have a big white page. Not helpful. So it's a good thing our guest knows what she's talking about, and we're not going to rely on the input from others, although we would like your input. We just can't get it from here. If you do need to send us a note or a message, you can always use my cell phone. You can always text me. Don't call me. People do that during the radio. It's like I can't actually talk to both of you at once. But you could text me at 530-515-7135. So we could go old school with that technology.
Yes.
It's funny that old school is texting, huh?
You are living on the edge giving out your phone number on the radio.
I always give out my phone number. What the heck, you know? You should be easy to find. I've always been easy to find.
Yeah, but don't be surprised because it doesn't always work for me.
Yeah, don't text Bill. He never knows.
No.
I come home, I'm like, did you get my message? No.
I'm saying when I call you, I never get you, so
That's because you have a special ringer that says, can't wait till later.
Yeah, okay.
It's special music, can't wait till later.
We'll talk later.
It's a song. It's a little song I know.
Yeah.
I guess you already know. You know my phone number, but my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
So there you can identify the voices. And our guest today is Elaine Willman. And she is joining us from Montana.
Are we gonna thank our sponsors?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. We have
got all higgledy-piggledy here at the beginning.
We have sponsors.
Do it.
Okay. Powerhouse Solar. We want to thank them for sponsoring the show this hour. They take care of all your solar needs here in Reading in the North State, and give them a call.
And they've been doing it a long time, too.
Yes, they have.
They're not like the fly-by-night solar guys.
No, give Bruce and Sue a call over there, and they can fix you up with just about anything you want. Their phone number is 530-275-5600.
Yeah, you were going there.
Yeah, I was going there. I was going to have you fax them, but don't fax them. Call them.
Yeah, don't fax them.
They like to talk to you.
And their website is powerhousesolar.com.
.com.
Ta-da! And thanks to all the individuals who sponsor the show. And I don't know if they request we keep their names private because they don't want to be associated with us publicly. or they just want to kind of keep sure, we, you know, make sure we don't disappear in the night.
That's right. We know who you are.
Yeah, we do. And thanks a lot. We appreciate
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
All right. Have we done all our chores?
I think so.
Bob, we forget anything?
Nope. Elaine is standing by.
Nice. All right, Ms. Willman, you sent me an email. You want to give folks a little snippet about you? I have posted all that on the website, but it's more fun when you do it.
Well, hello to you guys. I'm just thinking about all of you there floating away in California. And
yeah,
hoping,
but you know, don't get too excited because it's still a drought. You know, Jerry made sure to let us all know we're still having a drought.
Still having a drought.
Yeah, right.
You're in for another soaking, I guess, you know. I'm sitting here up in the beautiful Moise Valley of the Flathead Indian Reservation. It's just absolutely gorgeous, bright, sunny day. And but I wanted to take an opportunity, and thank you for that, to talk about a couple of national policies on the radar. One's moving right now, and the other one's starting up. The one that's moving right now is an effort to give our National Bison Range, which is, you know, an American treasure, absolutely gifted back to a little tribe, the Salish Kootenai tribe here. And there's a problem with that, not just the National Bison Range, but the National Bison Range is on the chopping block as we speak. But back in 2002, the Department of Interior listed 90 national parks, wildlife refuges, and the public resources, you know, public treasures, listed them as available to be managed and taken over by private tribal governments. The problem with that, and we could be talking Irish tribal governments, this isn't about culture, this is about separate private governments that do not follow the U.S. Constitution and have no duty to the American public. So for the Department of Interior to put 90 of our national parks wildlife resources up for giving to tribal governments, these private governments, that substantially limits the availability and access of all the rest of the American public. And so I have a problem with that. I have a serious problem with that. The Bison Range was one of the first national treasures acquired. It was carved out of land that was once the Flathead Reservation. It was taken by eminent domain, and the tribe was paid for the land, actually twice paid for the land. And the American public contributed funds to the American Bison Society to purchase the bison and create the National Bison Range for everyone back in 1908. More recently, in 2016, just last year, President Obama signed the Bison Legacy Act and created the bison as the national mammal. So this is the long history and recent history of a treasure of the American public. And the plan is to literally give the land back to this tribe and give them the bison that were acquired by everybody else and just walk away from it. I have no U.S. or state or Fish and Wildlife or BLM, no federal responsibility whatsoever. It just goes back to the tribe free, though they were paid for the land twice and never paid for the bison. As a little side note, this tribe has been after the Bison Range for at least a decade, probably longer, and was given a management contract to manage. They weren't given the Bison Range, but they were given a year's contract to manage the Bison Range, called an annual funding agreement, in which they botched it so badly the funding agreement had to be pulled because they were mismanaging the bison.
How do you mess up managing a bison range?
Well, you got to know the difference between a cow and a bison. A bison is a very wild, aggressive animal, and it requires extremely special expertise to care for it, to keep it safe from, you know, keep it safe in its environment and keep it safe from the American public. It's really quite an animal, quite an animal, and it has high speed. It can run as fast as a horse, and it's huge, and it has a kind of a mean instinct. So you better know what you're doing. It's not like you're going out and roping a cow. And they just botched it, so they lost that funding agreement. And a couple of years later, they gave the tribe another chance to manage the bison range, and again, the tribe messed it up. What the tribe did was immediately fire all the folks that worked for the Fish and Wildlife that had the expertise and were managing the bison, but they fired them and hired in tribal employees only that didn't have the expertise. So since they failed in managing it twice, what they're doing now is saying, oh, well, then we'll just give it to you. And that's, you know, one of the most historic national treasures in the country. It's a big, beautiful bison range and massive. It's wonderful. It's got a couple of roads you can drive through and see the bison safely. It's just a majestic treasure that belongs to the entire American public. It should not be just handed over to a small tribal government.
So just out of curiosity, could they decide the public isn't allowed to be on the land? I mean, what kind of latitude is there in this agreement?
If they own the land and they own the bison, they call the shots. They can determine who can come in, who can't come in. They can determine, well, it's one price for you and it's another price for somebody else. They can do it. If they own the whole National Bison Range, they make all the decisions.
So it isn't like, when BLM manages public land or, Forest Service or anything like that. It isn't that type of an agreement. They're managing it, but we all still have access to it. It's literally private property now.
It really becomes under the 100% control of the tribe. And then the tribe can determine who's going to work there and who can access it and when, if at all. It's just something that is one of the 90 wildlife and refuges and parks around the country that is beginning to get handed off. And it's really, really troublesome to me. We have enough problems with the BLM, which provides access to all Americans regardless of, you know, your ethnicity or whatever.
Right.
We have enough trouble with the federal government managing some of these places and limiting access to public lands. But to hand them over to a private government that has no duty to the American public, and that was paid for the land twice, and that has is lacking the expertise in managing the bison, is just really an ugly solution. It's just something that troubles me. So the reason I want to mention this is because there is a, they call it a Comprehensive Conservation Plan, a CCP, that the Fish and Wildlife is preparing. And they're listing three alternatives. The preferred alternative is the one I'm just speaking of, just giving it over the top. Another alternative is that they continue manage, that the Fish and Wildlife continues managing it as it has for decades. And then a third one is the, another management, another annual funding agreement to give the tribe a third shot at just managing it but not owning it. So of those three, the reasonable one is that it stays under the Fish and Wildlife Services and is managed consistently as it has been and is available to the entire American public. Another problem with the tribal government owning the bison range is that they have sovereign immunity, of course. And so if somebody's should harm or injury happen, you're out of luck. You can't sue them.
If you did have access to the land, you and you were on there doing hiking or whatever, and something happened.
Let's say you're in a car and you're traveling the little roads through the bison range and looking at the bison, and there's one nearby that rams your car or hurts somebody. With their tribal sovereign immunity, you're just toast. There's nothing you can do.
Interesting. And if it's run by a federal agency, you do have some recourse?
There's a claim process to follow, and there's remedies.
I did not know that. We need to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back with our guest, Elaine Willman, who really didn't tell you much about herself, so we'll do that when we come back.
Oh, okay.
We kind of glossed over that part. She has written two books. One is called Going to Pieces, The Dismantling of the United States of America. Second one is called Slumbering Thunder, A Primer for Combating the Spread of Federal Indian Policy and Tribalism Overwhelming America. So it's a kind of a topic that isn't covered a whole lot, and something that's a little bit confusing, and it's kind of good to get the information out there. So we're going to chat with Elaine for the rest of the program today. We hope you enjoy it. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Body, then they go. What shall we do about them? What do they want? What do they want? If I had my way, I'd travel off to Buffalo, sit by the lake and watch the world go by. Ladies in the sun, listen to the rain.
Who knew? Buffalo songs. Are we going to get a lot of Buffalo songs? Are there many?
There are a lot of Buffalo Springfield songs, but there are not a great deal of songs actually about the buffalo or the bison.
Well, that seems wrong. What's the difference between buffalo and bison? Are they different?
It's just two different names for the same mammal.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I don't feel so... I don't know. I'm always getting snaked by seeing things that seem easy, and it turns out, oh no, there's a whole big thing.
Big
it's
difference.
Way more complicated than you could figure out. So, hey, we figured out how to fix the chat room. Turns out the link is different. So, if you are going to the We the People page, let's try to say that twice fast. Don't even go for three times, just twice is enough. You will have to refresh your page and try the link again, or you can go to kcnr1460.com and follow the link. It says live, and one of the choices there is to listen to the program live, obviously, or join the chat room. So
yeah,
it appears to be kind of working. It's different. It's different, you know. It'll probably ultimately be better, but it's different. So, you know, we're all everybody's bugged. It seems harder. All right. Back to Elaine. So Elaine's been a busy bee. Tell them a little bit about your background, Elaine, because it's interesting and it is important to know.
I forgot that part, and I thank you for that.
It's okay. We shot right to the buffalo.
I know. I am of strong Cherokee ancestry. My mother and grandmother were both enrolled, but I am not enrolled. And my husband was of Shoshone ancestry from Wyoming and a descendant of Sacagawea's adopted son, Basil. I've grown up with a lifetime affection for Native American history and culture, and as has my husband. And I've lived on three different Indian reservations for the past 25 years. The Yakima for 16 years, the Oneida Reservation in Wisconsin for 8 years, and now I'm out here on the Flathead for the last couple of years. And that's on purpose. Part of it is my affection for the Native American culture, and part of it is my professional career. The way I earned a living was I worked as community development director or assistant city manager for municipalities, towns and cities located on these reservations. The reservations were all opened up over 100 years ago with the Dawes Act, and with the Allotment Act, and with the Homestead Act. They all opened up, so most of the reservations are co-located within counties and towns. In fact, one-third of the counties in this country are co-located on Indian reservations, but the American public really doesn't snap to that, and the tribal voices don't mention it. But it's a big deal. Most of the reservations are predominantly non-Indian. There's big towns and counties and cities on all of them, but you just don't hear much about it. So what is an ongoing issue, not with all tribal governments, some do very good, is the peaceful coexistence of tribal governing and municipal and county governing within the boundaries of these reservations. Peaceful coexistence. Some tribal governments do a really good job, and they're very collaborative with their towns and counties. Others are just adamantly goal-oriented to take those counties and towns down and to grab land and take it off the tax base and to just drive the settlers out. So there are some really aggressive tribes that are causing quite a lot of havoc across the country, but not all of them. So the other thing that's going on is the power of these tribal governments, at least since 1988 when the casino money started rolling in, they've been very good at purchasing elected officials, which I call coin-operated elected officials, and they've been getting quite a largesse from the federal government. So my research and my voice is about government policies and government decision-making, which is very separate from the culture. We could be speaking of Irish governments located in a third of the counties across the country or some other ethnicity. It's about government decision-making. And the federal government seems to be hell-bent in handing over America's national parks and resources to these private tribal governments. Last year in Congress, there were a half a dozen, and fortunately we were able to beat them back for now, there were half a dozen bills in the House and the Senate to allow tribal governments to take over the management of our national forests as well. And again, we're speaking of 1% of America's population. Only 1% of America's population are enrolled tribal members. But their leadership is so well-funded and so politically influential, and if you say no, you're a racist, that they are really, really expanding tribal governing authority over our public resources and natural resources and treasures. And in my view, it's absolutely wrong. It's a disservice to all of the taxpayers that fund these and they enjoy these resources and their vacations and such. It's just wrong. And so I talk about it, you know. that's part of the issue. And the other part of the issue is that with some tribes, the treatment of their tribal members is really horrific. They don't have, their tribal constitutions do not recognize the U.S. Constitution. The tribal members don't have the Bill of Rights. They have an Indian Civil Rights Act that is toothless. There's no enforcement. There's no remedy for a tribal member, but Congress gave them the Indian Civil Rights Act as a feel-good piece of paper that does not help the tribal members. And so they have to be quiet. They can't speak up. There's pretty serious consequences if they disagree with their tribal leadership. So those are kind of the things that I have focused on for 25 years. How can I help the tribal families? And how can I focus and educate about government decision-making at the federal and state levels that are affecting all of us tribal families and the rest of us, too, on the reservation?
So are you saying that if you live on the reservation, the rights granted to you with the Constitution don't apply?
If you're a tribal member and you're an enrolled member of that tribe, the Bill of Rights and the rights under the Constitution do not apply to you as an enrolled tribal member.
You're governed by their law, not the Constitution.
Yeah. Okay. If you're an enrolled tribal member, you're governed by the tribal law as an enrolled tribal member on the reservation. Yeah. Now, the term that is used that helps folks understand is we call the reservations checkerboarded. Since they were opened up for settling and all the lands were allotted out to individual Indians, and the reservations were totally transformed over 100 years ago. They installed counties, towns, and whatnot. We have checkerboarded land. By that I mean you may have one property owner who's a non-tribal property owner who is governed by a city and a county, and right next door you have an Indian trust parcel who is governed by a tribal government. It makes it difficult for planning, for planners in counties and towns, and I imagine tribal planners as well. It makes it difficult to peacefully coexist and have compatible land uses with two separate governments within the same boundary. So those are the kinds of difficulties that I've had to work with as a public employee for cities on reservations. And those are the complications of co-located, coexisting governments that have very different agendas and serve very different populations. So that's kind of the big picture of what the ongoing struggle is. And it's not a struggle on all reservations. There are tribes that are great neighbors. There are a few. But there are, unfortunately, more that are not great neighbors and that have tied into a larger agenda who really promote and support the United Nations Indigenous Movement, who want to take back all their Aboriginal lands, and who are actively working with the big greenies in the United Nations and the liberals in our federal government to unsettle the West, literally unsettle the West. And so that's where the peaceful coexistence gets increasingly problematic right now.
Sure, because some of the tribes are really good resource, not just resource managers, but resource users. I mean, they wind up being, you know, they're logging. They, I know there's a whole group in Oklahoma that are meat packers. I mean, there are a lot of tribes that are really industrious and you know, you'd like them. It's funny, you know, looking at what's happening in California. I mean, we'd like folks like that taking over some of our public land, because they could actually thin the trees and do some of that stuff that we can't do, because every time the Forest Service tries, they get sued or, you know, they're afraid of being sued, so they just don't do it.
Yeah. There's some wonderful expertise within tribal governments and wonderful land management.
But it isn't always.
You know, there's some very, very good things within the tribal resources. There's no question about that. I guess it's sort of like anything else. You know, we have state agencies across the country that are really good at what they do, and we have some that just suck. You know what I mean? So it's just
we've managed to have a lot of those here. We pride ourselves on being at the epicenter of the sucking, actually.
Well, yeah, I think Oroville Dam's a good example.
Yeah,
of
we just call it California, but it's really just sort of defaulting to the sucking right now.
I know. So
we got to take another quick break, Elaine. We'll be right back.
Okay.
That always degenerates into government bashing, doesn't it? But it's so cathartic, you know.
You can't help yourself.
No, I can't. Well, you deal with it enough, and after a while, you start looking around, going, "What the heck?" Oh, this sounds like a fun little song. You're listening to We the People.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play. Where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play. Where seldom heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
I was waiting for the punchline there. And we're back. So, Elaine, explain the difference between trust land and reservation land and all that. We sort of blew by that, but it's kind of confusing.
Indian trust land is land that is owned by the United States in title for the beneficial use and occupancy of the tribe. The title is that the land is owned by the United States, and the tribe has beneficial use and occupancy and governing authority over those lands, those parcels. That's part of the checkerboarding. There's Indian trust land all over the reservations.
So how does it become trust land?
Some of it was reinstated as trust land in 1934 under the Indian Reorganization Act, but all of it is increasing every year, because especially since the gaming money, because the tribes can buy private properties on the open market, and then they pursue an application to the Department of Interior to have the land taken into trust and taken off the tax rolls and taken off of jurisdiction of the states and counties. And so that's how they grow the Indian trust land base. They can buy any property they want from any willing seller, and they pay top dollar. And then they have the land taken into federal trust by the United States, and it's removed from the state and county tax base, and it's removed from state and county and local jurisdiction. So it's their land, but it's owned by the United States. The rest of the lands are regular lands, like where all of us live, private property under the jurisdiction of the local town or city or county or state, tax-paying properties, and they're the other part of the checkerboard. So you have the two kinds of parcels or properties within Indian reservations.
And so the trust land, a tribe could live on that land? They could build houses?
Oh, sure. They have full control of it.
Okay. What's the benefit between, whether you're a tribe or not a tribe, why do we have two types of land? Why do we have reservation land and why do we have trust land?
That's a very big question, but one of the things that happened was a shift in congressional positions that created this, what I call, monster, because it's a real monster for all parties. It really is.
Because my understanding is, like, California, can California make trust land? Don't they do that for the casinos?
Yes, the casinos have to be on land held in title by the United States.
But it's not always done by the federal government, though. It can be done by the state?
No, it's federal trust land.
Okay.
It has to
be. Maybe it's just the gaming contract that can be done by the state?
Yeah, the folks that fund those casinos, and basically that's the rest of the gaming industry, like Stations Casino and MGM and some Malaysian folks, they'll buy a big prime property with the plan of building a casino, and they'll pursue that property. They'll put an application into the Bureau of Indian Affairs and say, we propose to build a casino on this land. We want it taken into federal trust. And so as soon as the land is in federal trust, the casino can go up.
So that's how the casinos seem to pop up just about anywhere. They don't have to be on a reservation. They just have to be have to be trust land, so they can go out and buy land anywhere they want.
Yep, there's basically a lot of off reservation casinos now.
Yeah, just give it give the land to the federal government, and now you got yourself casino land.
It was originally the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act was originally intended for an economic tool for tribes to have casinos on within the boundaries of their reservations, but they put the little loopholes in there where they can put them anywhere as long as the land is in federal trust.
So is the federal trust land, does that fall under the same rules as reservation land as far as your rights if you're on that property?
It falls under the 100% jurisdiction of the tribe. So if you're a visiting casino customer and you get injured in the parking lot or your car is vandalized or you get food poisoning or something, they have sovereign immunity. You're out of luck.
So the Indian Trust land is sovereign land as well.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. There's no state or county authority or responsibilities. It's 100% land managed and owned, or managed on behalf of the tribe.
But it's interesting that it's owned by the federal government, and yet you don't have your constitutional rights on it. That's bizarre.
No. Yeah, it is, but that's the way it is, and that's part of this big shift that occurred early on in the 1870s. The reservations, that's what they called the assimilation period, where the Congress and a lot of bleeding heart American citizens truly felt that tribal members should be able to be full citizens like everybody else and should be able to own property and vote, and they wanted the reservation systems taken down. That's what motivated the Dawes Act, to give individual Indians a piece of land that included water and the right to vote. And when that Indian allotment, Latee, got his land, he became a citizen of that state. He could own property, he could vote, and he was no longer a member of his tribe. So this was going on in the 1870s and early 1900s, and it was almost done. All American Indians were made full citizens in 1924, whether they owned land or not. All American citizens in the Snyder Act, all American Indians, 1924 became citizens. Congress was heading for full, equal opportunity, equal rights for Indians. And then 10 years later, an avowed communist by the name of John Collier managed to become the Commissioner of Indian Affairs and put through the Indian Reorganization Act. And his message was, hey, this assimilation isn't working. They're better with their living apart from the rest of the society and living and having their own culture and their own reservations. And so from 1934 forward, it started reversing. And so all those reservations that were opened up and towns and counties formed on them, suddenly the whole thing started reversing. And that's where we have the checkerboarded lands and the dual governing systems, and which worked out okay for many, many years. People managed to work together, tribal governments and towns and counties. There was a pretty good rapport because there was a real cultural diversity on the reservations, and there's a very good live and let live. Then the gaming came in 88, and all of a sudden the big money and the big power and some of the rowdier tribes have become extremely abusive of their neighbors. Not, as I said, not all. Especially the tribes that aren't gaming. They get along very well with their neighbors, but the gaming tribes with the big money are really becoming bullies, and they're getting a lot of help from the federal government now through those coin-operated elections.
Right.
Well,
another thing that I don't think a lot of people realize is that if you're on the Indian rolls on a reservation, you don't pay any sales tax if you live on the reservation. Now, that doesn't hold true if you're not on the Indian rolls and you live on the reservation. Is that right?
Well, I lived on the Yakima Reservation for 16 years, and let me give that as an example, because that reservation is almost 80% Hispanic, and 10% Anglo and 10% Indian. And so my husband and I would go into the Safeway store in Toppenish, Washington for our groceries. We might be the only Anglos in the building. And we would get in line to pay for our groceries. And if we were behind a tribal member in the same Safeway store, the tribal member would not have to pay sales tax on the reservation. But right. We would. Everybody else does.
Right.
Is there a special card, or how do they know?
They have their enrollment cards, or they, you know, a lot of folks are very obviously Indian. They just say no tax, and they don't have to pay sales tax, but the other customers do, the non-Indian customers do. And I think that that's the way it is pretty much on most reservations.
I know that's the way it is here in our town.
Yeah,
any big-ticket items, a car, a tractor, something like that, it's delivered to the reservation, there's no sales tax.
Right, and that was the big deal. And also, the Yakima is the city of Yakima, Washington, is not on the Indian reservation. So the tribal members would go into the car dealerships in the city of Yakima, and they would pick out a car, and they'd say, I want to buy this car. And they'd have the dealership drive it to their home on the reservation to avoid the sales tax.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, it seems a little bit unfair, because it doesn't really cut both directions.
Well, it can get a lot unfair, because the counties and towns have to provide the fire services.
That's right.
The Yakima County Sheriffs have to provide full protection to all the lands within the county. Yakima Fire Protection District. So when a fire would occur on a tribal property, the Yakima Fire Protection would respond and put it out and whatnot, but they receive no money from the tribal government for the fire services.
But that's a that's not mandatory. Isn't that an agreement they have?
But some tribes do.
Mandatory.
Oh, they do. Really? They absolutely have to provide those services.
They have to respond to every property in the county if there's a call for fire service. It's mandatory, but the tribe doesn't reimburse the county for its fire protection.
Wow.
But, and police, I know sometimes they have their own law enforcement on tribal property if it's kind of a big place.
And for the most part, that works pretty well. There's tribal police and municipal police and county sheriffs and state highway. And on the ground, the law enforcement officers on the ground and in the vehicles and responding to calls work pretty much very well together. There's a camaraderie among the multiple forces on the ground. Where the confusion can come in is that a call for maybe there's a crime being committed on somewhere out on the reservation, and you have two or three different responders, and the first thing they have to determine is this state land, is this county land, is this tribal land, to see who takes the lead in law enforcement.
Right.
And so it has its complications, but for the most part, the tribal law enforcement folks and the other law enforcement folks work really well. Where it gets ugly is at the political level of tribal leaders who push for their tribal officers to be able to write a ticket to a non-tribal member into a tribal court or something like that. The officers, a county sheriff will cite a non-tribal person into a county court. A tribal or the county sheriff will cite a tribal member into his tribal court. So there's a lot of complications.
Are we talking like speeding tickets and stuff?
Like speeding tickets and, you know,
really?
And things of that nature, yes.
So
it has to be cited in the proper court.
So
because
have to
a
be
non-tribal
a,
person it, has no rights in a tribal court.
Yeah, right.
They don't have any due process, so they have to be cited into the court of their government.
Are we talking on big reservations? Because around here we don't really have, I guess I'm just thinking, you know, you're always looking at, mentally looking through your own town. And
it can be big or small.
Really? And they all have a tribal court, huh?
Most of them do. Even the very small reservations all along the Washington coast, which is highly urbanized, and most of those little reservations, they still have their tribal courts, and their members get cited into the tribal court, and the non-members get cited into municipal or county courts.
So if I go to a casino, and I'm walking back out to my car, and I see somebody breaking into my car, and I want to press charges, if they're not a tribal member, does that person get tried in a tribal court because they're on the reservation, or do they go to the county?
You know, I'm not an attorney, but I believe if
you
the person
damaging
your car
right?
is a non-tribal person, I think you can press charges in a municipal or county court. If you know the individual is not a tribal member,
right.
I think you can cite the individual into a municipal or county court. I'm not.
But if they're a tribal member, then the tribal court tries them?
But you can't hold the casino managers or the tribe responsible for any harm that happens to you by either, by a tribal or not. You can't hold the casino. They have sovereign immunity.
Interesting.
But if you happen to know the individual, you catch them red-handed, you can have them arrested if it's a non-tribal person.
Hmm. Very tricky. We need to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about more tricky stuff that we don't...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tricky stuff.
Elaine's not an attorney, but she stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, so she's going to be our attorney for today.
That's right. She played one on TV.
We'll be right back.
I'm an Indian outlaw, half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. She's a one of a kind. All my friends call me Bear Claw. The village chicken is my pawpaw. He gets his orders from my mama. She makes him walk the line. You can find me in my wigwam. I'll be beating on my tom-tom. Pull out the pipe and smoke you some. And pass it around. 'Cause I'm an Indian outlaw. Half Cherokee and Choctaw. My baby, she's a Chippewa. She's a one of a kind.
The whole Cherokee Nation put us on this reservation, took away our ways of life, the tomahawk and the bow and knife. Our native tongue and taught their English to our young. And all the beads we made by hand are nowadays made in Japan. Cherokee people, Cherokee tribe, so proud to live, so proud to die.
There you go, Elaine. It's your song for all your relatives.
I heard it. I love it.
That's a great song.
Yeah. I would like to wrap up on the Bison Range.
Yes,
and move on to
you're reading my mind.
But I wanted to mention one thing.
Okay.
The public can comment on whether you support or oppose the National Bison Range being given to a small private government, like a tribal government. And you can do that by sending an email to a very nice lady. Her name is Toni Griffin, and her email address is TONI_Griffin, GRIFFIN, at SWS.gov. TONI_Griffin at SWS.gov. I have a pup here, I'm sorry. The deadline for the comments was February 17th, so we're a day or two past that. But Tony told me that they accept comments after the deadline. So if there are listeners who believe that our national parks and our national wildlife refuges and the National Bison Range should stay in the hands of federal or state management, it would be really helpful if some of your readers would shoot Tony an email very quickly and say, we oppose this, because quantity counts on these comments. And she's accepting comments after the deadline.
Absolutely.
Oh, great.
So if you happen to be driving or you're doing something else and you didn't have a chance to write all that down, just go to the page at wethepeopleradio.us And I headed that segment from Elaine that says National Bison Range needs your comments. And Tony Griffin at fishandwildlifeservice.gov, her information is there.
FWS.gov. Yeah. So the second piece I wanted to talk about, and this is an early heads up. I spotted it, and it shocked me that it was even in the Federal Register. I got this stupid little, I'm dog sitting.
It's quite a wolf you got there.
Arthur's out barking in the car, I'm sure.
He's a little border collie pup, and he wants to play with our older dog, and the older dog's not having it.
We know that story.
I was going to say, we were having that in the car, too.
So the other is a notice that came out in the Federal Register, I think it was February 8th, and it's called Traders with Indians. And that caught my eye. I thought, what do you mean traders with Indians? That's, you know, we're going back a long, over a century. And it's an advance notice to the proposed rulemaking. Trigger words there are proposed rulemaking. It's an advance notice where they're setting up 6 consultation meetings with tribes across the country to update the Traders with Indians regulations. Well, the Traders with Indians regulations, it started in 1876, and that's when most of the Western states weren't even states. We had a lot of territories, and that's a time period where there were truly scoundrel folks that were abusive when trading with Indians, and they needed some control and enforcement. So they put in the Traders with Indians regulation that required any person doing any form of commerce with an Indian tribe to be approved and licensed under the sole authority of the BIA commissioner. And that gave the commissioner enforcement to pick up the guys that were abusing their trades with Indians. That was 1876. So all of a sudden we're in 2017, and we want to upgrade Traders with Indians. And they're setting up these consultation meetings across the country, from Florida to Washington State. The problem goes back to our checkerboarded reservations, massive businesses, non-tribal businesses in towns and counties across Indian country that have no responsibility or accountability. The tribes have no authority over the non-tribal businesses or anything. And there's an effort. It is spawned by, I think, 2 people. One is the current chair of the National Congress of American Indians, a fellow named Brian Clattersby. He's also the chair of a small little tribe. I think they have 491 members up in western Washington, the Swinomish tribe. And so Brian Clattersby, as his chair, while he's in the power seat of the National Congress of Indians, he's bringing this forward. The first consultation meeting happens to be on his reservation. The other one is, I believe, John McCoy, who's the top dog, or one of the top dogs, at the Tulalip tribe, another small tribe in western Washington.
Elaine, we'll have to roll this over into the next hour, but I wanted people to know that clip from the Federal Register is actually on the page for today. So
yeah, let's pick up this story, because this is interesting.
Yes, actually, and during the news break, you could actually go read it. You got like 5 minutes, and you already know the news. It's just the same stuff. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
So much better if we just do it at the beginning, huh?
It is.
That's how we're supposed to do it. And then if I just don't forget. So we have...
And we're brought to you by...
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Powerhouse Solar. I don't have their page up. You caught me off guard.
530-275-5600 is the phone number.
Or we or Powerhouse.
Not We the People Radio. We don't do solar in our spare time.
No, we don't.
But we can recognize when it's sunny out.
Right.
That's our qualification, and it ends there.
I could on TV, though, but not in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about on radio? Can you do it then?
I'm having a hard time doing it on radio.
Bill's got his headphones on backwards, and he's totally spazzing out over there.
Thank you.
I wish we had a camera in here.
Be careful what you wish for.
Bruce and Sue are like, you know what? We're going to stop sponsoring those people.
These guys are chuckleheads.
They're making us sound like idiots. Bruce and Sue are way better at solar than Bill and I are.
Yes, they are.
Way better.
They actually know what they're doing.
You can find them at powerhousesolar.com.
There you go.
And they've been in business since 2003. Yeah, so they predate this program.
That's right. They're not going
anywhere. That's our problem. We're at a handicap. We started after they did. What a couple of goofs. All right. So our guest today is Elaine Willman. And if you just tuned in, you're going to have to listen to the first part of the program because there's a lot of information. So we can't start over for you. I'm sorry. But we will continue on with this. You know, whenever you get into National Indian Policy, it's confusing stuff. And, you know, our point in bringing all this up isn't that it's bad or good or whatever. It's just most people don't know how it works or what's going on with it. And it is something that affects all of us, affects us, you know, on our tax base, our property base in all of our counties. And, you know, people should realize there are different laws that apply when you're on Indian trust land, if it's a casino, if it's a reservation, that there are different law enforcement things. There's really quite a bit to know that, I don't know, I never learned any of this in school. But anymore, just based on, you know, some of the phone calls I get at work, you know, there's a lot of things not being taught at school anymore. But Elaine is really an expert, and she has written a couple of books. I've linked them both on the page for you today. And the first one is called Going to Pieces, The Dismantling of the United States of America. And it's a story of an adventurous road trip across 17 Indian reservations from Washington to the state of New York. I think you'll really like it. Her second book that came out, when was it, Elaine? Last year or the year before?
March of 2016.
I didn't think it was that long ago.
No, it
Slumbering Thunder,
about a year ago.
A Primer for Confronting the Spread of Federal Indian Policy and Tribalism. Oh, March 2016, duh. I guess if I read it off the page, but I actually knew that one, so I was just kind of freewheeling it. You can find previous shows with Elaine on different topics. You can find those on the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us, and you can also find our emails and cell phone numbers and stuff like that. If you'd like to contact us with guests for the future, topics for the future, always happy to have that. And any sponsorship ideas, always, again, grateful for that as well. There you go. That is the end. Got that hammered out in like 4 minutes. Never happens that easy. Okay, so...
Well, thank you for mentioning Going to Pieces again, because a lot of your readers have that book. It's been a big seller since 2005. And it is an education tool. It truly is. But there's a chapter on the National Bison Range that I did two chapters in Montana and interviewed employees of the National Bison. There's a chapter that goes into detail. Yeah, the first chapter is called Buffalo Country. The first Montana chapter in the book is called Buffalo Country. And it was really illuminating for me. I mean, I knew nothing about that stuff when I went through there in the fall of 2004, but I have followed it ever since.
Now, Elaine, anyway. We posted your request for people to make commentary to the Fish and Wildlife Service on handing over of the bison range. That's on the page here. But tell me this. I realize the comment period has stopped, and they said, hey, send it anyway, but when is too late? Do we know?
Well, I think that's an arbitrary call that the Fish and Wildlife Service will make. But I would encourage people to get their comments in right away so that they're as close to the deadline as possible.
Because we always have people who listen like later in the week. You know, for some reason we have a lot of listenership on the archives on Wednesdays. I don't know why people...
I think if they get them in within the next couple of weeks, that'll be fine.
Good to know.
And as I said, I think quantity counts. The American people need to speak up and say, these are for everybody. Our national parks and wildlife refuges and forests, they're for everybody.
Well, and for those people who might be thinking, but the tribe might do a better job, this tribe has already had this taken away twice, right.
And they've been paid for the land twice, big time. So this would be literally gifting them back the land and gifting them all the bison that were purchased by American taxpayers. Gifting them the whole thing back, just washing their hands of it, and then it becomes a tribal government entity. And who knows how that.
And if they do that and the management isn't going well and the, I don't know how you decide if it's not going well, I'm assuming you have fewer buffalo than you're supposed to, but okay, so let's say, however the measurement is, if it's not going well, and they have literally given the land and the buffalo over to the tribe, can they take it back?
I don't think so. And I think it would be very difficult, and so the bison ranch just ceases to exist, and it's just tribal land.
Okay.
Which is the goal of this tribe and many others that just want all their land back. So this is one way to get it.
Okay. And the first two times, they were just managing very much like Forest Service or BLM manages public land. The tribe was managing, and it just kind of was a failed experiment a couple of times. So that's the recap of the first hour for you, but that's as far as we go.
the bison range is 18,000 acres. So if it's gifted back to them, having paid them twice for it, it's truly a gift, and it's theirs forever.
Okay.
So whether or not the bison range continues to exist would become a question. And that's a real historical loss for the American public. There's a lot of folks that come up to Yosemite, that come up the bison range, Glacier National Park, and these places are just resources for vacationers that want to see the Wild West and want to remember American history. It's for all Americans. So that's why I'm kind of noisy about this. But I'd like to get back to this traders with Indians that
The second part of our... So we have the trader. Let's see, I listed what you had sent me under trader regulations. And just in case we're not enunciating properly, we're saying T-R-A-D-E-R, not traitor.
Exactly.
Seems like lately everybody's throwing around the word traitor, so I thought we should be clear about this. We're talking about traders.
Traders. And this is an old 1876 regulation that now in 2017, there's six different consultations meetings set up between the federal bureaucracy and tribes to discuss this. And these consultation meetings are not open to the public. And that's one of the reasons that I've been into this research for 25 years is that a federal Indian policy is what I call the best-kept secret. It's conversations between tribal leaders and federal agencies, and it's not information privy to the public, but their decisions have direct impact on the public. And so this is another case where they're going to review this old 1876 regulation, and they're going to propose rulemaking, and whatever they propose or whatever rule is the outcome will affect all traders with Indians in 2017.
Now, how would that really, I mean, what kind of changes are they talking about? I mean, if I wanted...
So if I
was a vendor and I wanted to go to an Indian reservation and sell something, there's special rules that I have to go by?
Well, right now, because we have, remember, the checkerboarded land, if you're a business on a state land or municipal property, what we call fee land, then you get licensed with your city or your town or your county or state, whatever licensing or permitting. You pay property taxes, business taxes, sales taxes to your counties and states, and you are under the authority and the protections of the state on anything that's not trust land. You are under the protections and authority of the state.
Okay.
And so the tribal governments have no influence on you whatsoever.
And that's probably the majority of businesses in the country are
exactly
right.
Exactly. We're talking hundreds of thousands of businesses located in Indian country that are protected and under the authority of states. This traders with Indians would remove state taxes of any form. It would remove state authority, and anybody trading in Indian country would have to be licensed and would be under the governance of the tribe.
So make sure I got this right. If I own a business that's on Indian land, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
then I would be under their regulations.
No. It's no. Indian land is Indian trust land. Their authority is over only on trust parcels.
Okay.
Remember, we're checkerboarded. Most of the Indian parcels within, most of the parcels within Indian reservations are non-tribal. They're not trust. They're under the governance of the state and counties and towns.
Okay.
And the tribe has nothing to do with them and nothing to say and no authority over them.
Right.
This traders with Indians would change all that. It would wipe out the state ability to tax, to collect property tax, sales tax, licensing. It would wipe out the taxation of states or any activity of states on what is currently state authority and lands. And it would require all those people trading in Indian country to be accountable to the tribe. And here's what trading, I want to read the 1876 definition of what is meant by trading. It means buying, selling, bartering, renting, leasing, permitting, and any other transaction involving the acquisition of property or services. Now, there are huge shopping centers and stores and businesses and factories within boundaries of Indian reservations that are not accountable to the tribal government. They're accountable to the state. And they're taxed by the state. And they're licensed by the state.
But they're on Indian land?
See, we don't have that.
No, they're not on Indian land. They're not even on Indian land, but they're within the boundary of the reservation.
Oh, that's the checkerboard thing. Okay, I got
you.
I got you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have that out here.
I don't think we really have that near us, so this is kind of a new...
We do have idea. Indian land that's not attached to the actual reservation, but we don't... Yeah. I think on the reservation, it's You're, all
Yeah,
Indian.
This is a this is a scope that we don't actually experience locally. We need to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Elaine Willman. We'll continue discussing this, this idea of trading and the proposed rule changes that she found in the Federal Register. And if you'd like to read the rules directly, you can find them right on our page, wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
One night when the moon was bright on a moonlit day, that is where I found my little Cherokee maid. The memory of that night of love is lingering yet, and I know I never will forget my little Cherokee maiden. I love her so, and though we're far apart, I know I'll never betray my love for her for anybody else's heart. Someday I'll make a trip back to the Cherokee Strip, and I'll carry her away with me. My little Cherokee maiden and me.
I like that one too. I like it when you're on Elaine. We can play all our Cherokee songs.
Yeah, a little Merle there.
They're fun.
Hey, is it Bill or Bob that does the music?
Bob does the music, and Bill wears his headphones backwards. totally different people.
Truly awesome music. But Bob, I haven't heard my all-time favorite Kalijah song yet.
Oh, that's still coming up.
Kalijah's in the Kingdom.
Oh, that's the one I just cried like a baby when I was a little girl.
Oh, we'll play that at the end then.
It's the first song I remember on the radio as a child. It used to just upset me so bad.
Hey,
I love that.
This is a Ginger or Marianne type question. Do you like the Hank Williams Jr. version or the Charlie Pride version better?
I like the original.
That'd be Charlie Pride, huh?
I like the original, yeah. Whatever it was that I listened to when I was about 8 or 9 years old, when radio was coming into my life as a child,
And the cigar store Indian there stood.
I'll look that up and verify which was the original. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So we were talking in during
Indian
the
traders,
actual
and we were talking about
commercials though. No, we were talking during the commercials. Okay, so we still don't really quite get it.
I know.
Slow.
And I figured out a way. What is the nearest town where you do your grocery shopping or you go to the auto parts store? What's your nearest town?
That would be Reading. Just
Reading. Okay. Let's say you go into Reading to go shopping.
Yeah.
And Reading is within the boundary of an Indian reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And all the businesses in Reading are non-Indian, and they're sitting on non-Indian land. and they're accountable to the state and the counties, and all the taxes that are derived from those businesses, including property taxes of the neighbors, the residences, the property owners, the renters, the landlords, all of the folks in Redding. If Redding is located within the boundary of an Indian reservation...
So if they're completely surrounded by reservation land...
Surrounded by a... No, not surrounded by reservation land necessarily, but within the legal boundary of an Indian reservation. There's a whole lot of non-Indian land within the boundaries of a reservation.
See, that's the thing, that's the part that I guess I get confused. If you're on a reservation, I thought a reservation was a chunk of land, and everything within that boundary is a reservation.
Yeah.
So
it is. The reservations were opened up. They were very opened up and settled predominantly by non-Indians, and their towns were incorporated, counties formed up. And most of the land on Indian reservations is non-Indian land under the jurisdiction of the state.
So how would you know if your town is within the original boundary of an Indian reservation?
Well, you would get a map and look for the boundary of that reservation. Most of the reservations are very small, but the Yakima is 4 million acres. There's four big towns on the Yakima reservation. And there's predominantly, all those towns have hundreds and hundreds of non-Indian businesses.
Sure.
And hundreds of real estate agents, landlords, things like that.
Because a lot of land inside that reservation boundary is not Indian land, it's private land. Okay.
Exactly, and that's what the public doesn't understand, and the tribe never speaks of it.
Well, I have never heard of that.
I know. The tribes don't want you to know. They want you to think, they got everything in their reservation boundary, and they don't. But they're going after it. And that's what this Traders with Indians is about. They are flat going after it. So, if you're a landlord, if you have a little shop, if you barter anything, What this Traders with Indians regulation update is oriented to do is to take away that state authority over those lands and require anybody doing any form of trading to be under the control of the tribal government. Now think about that, because a lot of property taxes, most municipalities and counties, their whole operating budget is based on property taxes.
Sure.
Buying property is trading. Renting property is trading. Shopping in a store is trading. Babysitting is trading. Everything, this definition of trading is so broad that the goal is to wipe out the revenues of these states and counties and take over control of all trading within the boundary of Indian
Reserve. So anything then that was traded is taxed by the reservation after that, and not by the state.
Right, and so all those state revenues go away. All those operating budgets in counties and towns goes away. All the protections and authorities of those state and county goes away. And you're under the control, if you trade in any manner, you're under the control of a tribe that does not allow you to attend the meetings, that has no duty to you. And it's pretty wicked.
That
it's
sounds pretty wicked. Sweeping. Is that something that the people need to get to vote on, or is that something that the bureaucrats are just going to pass?
Is this Indian Affairs, Bureau of Indian Affairs?
Pardon?
Who's
it's coming from? It was published, and here's the really weird thing. It was published on February 8th in the Federal Register. And for your listeners, the Federal Register is like the daily newspaper. Any federal agency that takes any action at all, a proposed rule, a final decision, a regulation, gets published in the Federal Register every day. Now, on January 20th, when the administration changed, a notice went out to the Department of Interior, freeze everything. Anything that you are going to do is on hold until there's a new Secretary of Interior, until there's a new BIA Commissioner. Everything coming out of the Department of Interior and most of your other federal agencies, same thing happened to EPA, they're frozen. And so the Federal Register lately has been almost empty. Almost empty.
Because without, and just so people understand, without secretaries of the different, the different departments, you basically have no leadership in those departments.
Right.
So you would have I mean, unelected.
Lower-level bureaucrats, yeah, just making all the rules, yeah, and enforcing,
you know, going wild. And so people said, oh, well, they're muzzling the agencies.
So are you saying, are you saying, Elaine, that that these proposed changes under the current situation or under the current administration, when he lifts that freeze, they will go into effect?
Well, the strange thing is, how did this notice get published in the first place?
Yeah, right.
There's a freeze. This is not a notice that, to my knowledge, has been approved by any Trump administration authority. This is something that was published when there was a freeze. And these meetings start up this month in March, these six meetings across the country. How that thing even got published in the Federal Register under a transition freeze of administrations is the first question, and I've got people looking into that for me. But they have set up these consultation meetings in Miami, you know, all over the place, six of them. And these consultation meetings are not open to the public. But everything they're talking about
affects the public.
Oh, hugely. And it affects counties, it affects states, it affects revenue that states and counties and towns rely upon.
Well, who's invited to these meetings? Who's going to attend?
Tribal leaders only.
Only?
Yep.
So yeah, doesn't have a seat at the table.
I'm in touch with a really intelligent prosecuting attorney whose county is located within an Indian reservation. When I sent him this notice, he sent an inquiry to the tribal leader saying, what's this about? May I attend the consultation meetings? And he was told, no, they're not open to the public. The county prosecuting attorney can't even attend. See, this is why federal Indian policy is best kept secret until it hits you.
So this has to be, once they have their meetings and all their private consultations, this is something that may or may not be approved by the Secretary of the Interior. Is he the final word that says go or don't go?
Either the Assistant Secretary, who is the Bureau of Indian Affairs Commissioner, or the Secretary of Interior himself. Neither one of those positions have been filled yet in the new administration. The freeze is still on at the Department of Interior.
Right, because we have Senate dragging their feet, and so you don't have people in these chairs.
Well, in this case, I'm glad they're dragging their feet.
How this thing even got in the Federal Register February 8th, I will never know.
Not really.
But I'm going to find out. I've actually sent inquiries to the Trump administration saying, did one of you guys authorize this? I don't think they did. I'm sure they didn't. But some embedded bureaucrat published it. Got it.
They're having some problems with that. Holdovers are pulling strings behind the scenes and getting some pretty dastardly things.
And their first consultation meeting is next week.
Oh.
And they have six of them between February 23rd and March 16th. They're pulling these consultation meetings for this proposed ruling together very quickly.
Would the Bureau of Indian Affairs attend? Would the Bureau of Indian Affairs attend these meetings?
They run them. They set them up to work with on behalf of the tribal governments.
But there's no head of Indian Affairs right now in the new administration.
Somebody in BIA has scheduled these consultation meetings in Anacortes, Washington, Miami, Florida, Valley Center, California, Billings, Montana, Rapid City, South Dakota, Las Vegas, saying, all you tribes near these areas, you come into these tribal consultation meetings because we're going to take a hard look at traders with Indians and get it all done for you, for everyone that lives within an Indian reservation boundary.
Wow. So is that
the public may not attend.
And is that the biggest, what else is in these new proposed changes? I mean, that's not big enough.
That's what the consultation meetings are for. They're asking the tribes, what do you want? How do you want to upgrade this? What do you want to do? And the two names I gave you before, Brian Kladusby, chair of the National Congress of American Indians, there's no question what he wants to do. He wants to wipe out all authority of the state and counties and all the revenues of states and counties within his reservation, and that money and that control goes to his tribe. He's behind this. He's number one behind this, and another fellow is too. this is, you know, I talk on other subjects like water confiscation, handing the tribal governments management of our forests. This unsettling of the West, it was in full bloom under the past administration. Hopefully, we can put some brakes on it under the new administration. But how this thing got out in the Federal Register and how they can set up those consultation meetings that quickly is really alarming to me, because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of American businesses over which they are protected by their states and counties, and they are under the authority of their states and counties, and they have no duty whatsoever to a tribal government.
Wow.
Hundreds of thousands of businesses and towns across the country.
All right, hold that thought.
Yeah, I've got another question on that, but we'll pick it up after the break.
All right, we're going to be back with our guest, Elaine Willman. And just in case you have tuned in late to this, not trying to make it a confusing story, but it's new information for a lot of folks. You can find all the details that we're discussing in the page from the Federal Register and the information Elaine has sent us at wethepeopleradio.us. We will be right back with you. Elijah, the Cigar Store Indian. Tell us, Bob, who was it?
That was Charlie Pride.
I'm 73, and that song still gives me goosebumps. Takes me back to a little farm in the Spokane Valley when we first had a radio in the house and turned on the radio.
You might have heard Hank Williams Sr. Recorded that way back in 1952. That was the original.
Oh, then that's what I was hearing. About that year.
This was Charlie Pride's version from 1969.
Any version is wonderful.
There you go.
Above them all.
you really kind of have to pay attention, because it's not obvious right away what they're talking about. You start realizing it's like, oh, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was so brokenhearted. I got it as a little girl,
Yeah. So Elaine, we were talking about
Phil's over here just
training with Indians.
Spinning.
I'm still beside myself on this thing.
Standing here beside myself.
I'm standing here beside myself. So let's say this rule goes through. And now all these businesses that are within the boundaries of a reservation, not necessarily on, well, they would be on privately held ground within the reservation boundaries, they now have to send their tax revenue, whatever the Indian reservation deems that to be, that money now would go direct to the reservation and not your state and county agencies. Now let's say that goes through, and I'm a small business owner and I decide, you know what, I'm not sending my money to the reservation. Does the reservation have the law enforcement ability to collect that money?
They would if it goes through, they would. What will happen is a lot of non-tribal businesses will close up shop, and a lot of families and non-Indians will leave the reservation, which is the point.
So would they?
And the state
turn,
would lose all that revenue.
Well, sure,
and all that
sure.
Authority.
So would they turn like the local state police or the federal agency turn them over to those folks for collection
be no funding for them. There would be no funding for government, for county governments, municipal governments. There'd be none.
Right, but the reservation now has the burden of collecting that money, and if the money doesn't come in, do they turn it over to the federal government for collection?
Well, I would imagine that if this Traders with Indians goes the way the two nefarious leaders want it to go, there would be some kind of enforcement mechanism in it, and there would be some kind of collection mechanism in it, and it would be all hell for non-tribal people that live on the reservations.
Wow. That is stunning.
But here's the big picture. It's entirely, that concept is entirely unconstitutional.
That is
completely illegal, completely unconstitutional. It violates the property rights, the civil rights, the constitutional rights of every non-Indian that lives within an Indian reservation boundary, business owners and families, all of them. It violates all of their rights if this goes through. States,
wow.
Your state legislators and your county commissioners and all of your elected officials need an early heads up. I hope a few of them are listening today. That's why I'm getting this out everywhere I can. This needs to be nipped in the bud. This needs to be stopped right now. It is not legal. But a lot of things that are not legal have been implemented under federal Indian policy.
Well, you have to
take them into court, and
right.
You're years getting a decision into court, and meanwhile, they've wiped you out.
Well, look at all the Second Amendment stuff that's going on in California, most of which is totally illegal and in violation of the Second Amendment, but they're enforcing it anyway.
Yeah. I think this was one of the last pieces in terms of unsettling the West. I think, this is the economic arm to unsettle the West. They've already done it with the major river systems, the Columbia, the Missouri. The major river systems have these the river system boundaries. And the rivers and waters used to be for economic development and agriculture and irrigation. Now they're for protecting cultural resources, and they're all about the tribes. So they confiscated most of the waters in the Northwest.
But see, at the end of the day, they're always about, I mean, one thing to point out is they're about the tribes, really, that they like. And I mean that in the sense of the people who are playing ball with the environmentalists, because
environmentalists are moneying them up. The environmentalists are helping with this. This blends so well with Agenda 2030, with taking down the United States. This just blends so well with the indigenous movement at the United Nations. It all folds in. It's incrementalism that is spreading this tribalism as a governing system to take down states. It really is happening. But most folks across the country have this dancing with wolves. They just think there's a reservation out there with wonderful
It's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I had this conversation with somebody who was talking about her son was just really, infatuated with the new wolf policy and all that. And I had to explain to her, the realities of wolves and what really happens, and pointed her toward Ted Lyon's book, The Real Wolf, so we could get past the Dancing with Wolves. But I was thinking about the Shasta Nation up there in Siskiyou County, those guys, their historical footprint is the bulk of the county. They have people buried under the reservoirs behind the dams that the environmentalists and the other tribes want to take out. Those guys should have some standing, but because they got hoodwinked on a treaty deal years ago, and that's in the process of being rectified, but because they're not technically federally recognized, they just get shined through the whole process. So it's not that Native Americans are getting the upper hand. It's really tribes that are recognized that are playing ball with the agencies and the environmentalists.
Well,
potential treatment.
The tribal governments that are cutting checks to state legislators and that are controlling the elected voices.
Yeah, they're not even. I don't even think they're getting away with that. I think at the end of the day, they've just been having a love fest with the agencies.
Yeah, but the tribal government in and of itself has no authority to make these decisions. But the federal government and state governments do. And as the federal government and state governments cooperate with these things, then the tribal expansion of governing over non-members increases, and the state's authority diminishes, and ultimately the state natural resources, the state economy, everything gets taken down and replaced with tribalism.
Why would any state government go along with this?
California, one word, California.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
why would they do
Oregon,
any of
Montana.
The crazy stuff they do?
But they're basically cutting their own throat, aren't they? I mean, aren't they going to lose all the revenue?
Yes, they are, but if they're the elected official in office at the time and they're getting big money for their campaigns from tribes, they don't care. They really don't care.
See, and I don't know what's going on with, like, Jerry. See, these guys are such ideologues out here that it's, I don't even know if it's as easy as that, because, I mean, they're just, you know, like the idea of CalPERS, the retirement system here in California, is, you know, looking kind of, the outcome's looking kind of bleak, but what have they done from an investment standpoint? They're not investing in anything that's connected to fossil fuels, nothing that involves firearms. They've taken this like, weird lefty list of things you can invest in. Well, I'm sorry, but those don't make any money. So their pension system's in the toilet, but they won't invest in things that make money because it's just against their feelings.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my God. Yeah. Do we have a song about feelings? I know we have to take a quick break, but, I'm about burned out on feelings, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
I'm becoming somewhat intolerant of feelings. We'll come right back, Elaine. We got to take a quick break, one more before the top of the hour. This always goes so fast. Whenever you're on, you're like a time traveler.
Yeah, I really got to double up on my blood pressure medication when we talk about this. Unbelievable.
I was talking to somebody about the VA the other day, and I said, "Hey, I'm really sorry I'm making your blood pressure go up." The guy goes, "No, I take medication for low blood pressure. Actually, this is really good for me." I was like, "Well, you ought to come to work with me every day. You could just be healthy and forget the medication." Oh, my gosh. So you're listening. Our guest is Elaine Willman, just in case we kind of blew that off and assumed here, so our listeners can catch up with that. Elaine Willman's the author of two terrific books that we have posted on the site at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
When the train pulled into the station, he rolled up his sleeves and rosined up his pole. Upside down, orange blossom special. 'Cause if you wanna make a living, you gotta put on a good show. Smell smoke and the cinders. He slick shake back his hair, open up his cage, play a Cherokee fiddle, just play it for the whiskey. Good whiskey never let him lose face.
Meet me in Montana, I want to see the
Elaine. Big Montana sky sounds so relaxing, but none of this is relaxing.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at the big Montana sky. I'm so blessed to live where I am. And it's a good thing you can't watch me because your bumper music gets me up and dancing. It does. It is great.
Okay, we're going to require
Skype.
Skype now.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Video when trouble. We have our guests on from now on.
You know, but one of the points that what I've been following over the recent years and why I love to just talk about this stuff because it's not public information and we need the education, is this is a classic example. This is an 1876 rule when most of the Western states weren't even in existence, when this was territory. And you know, we've talked about revisionist history. This is a movement that's been going on for years, certainly under the past administration and way before that, to reverse history, reverse it. This rule wants to take us back to 1876, where states didn't exist and don't matter.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And
sure.
where these Indian reservations were not predominantly populated by non-Indians, it wants to take America back to 1876. And that cannot be done in 2017. It just cannot be. But you have to watch this crap because so much gets put into law that is illegal, highly unconstitutional. And then you're decades reversing it. And by then it's too late.
Yeah, if you can.
If you can, yeah. So it does tie in with the international goal. You know, America is a prime target. Our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is on the line here, internationally, globally. And the tribes are pawns. The radical tribal leaders just jump right in. They want to be recognized internationally. They'll take all the funding from the Greenies and the Agenda 21 folks, they'll take all the funding from anybody to recognize them internationally so they're superior to the United States, which happens to subsidize them. All of us taxpayers subsidize them.
Sure.
And they're the only governments in our country. This is another huge reason why we have coin-operated elected officials. They're the only governments that can write a check out of their general treasury. They can cut checks to a political incumbent or candidate right out of their general treasury, which is our taxpayer dollars, and redirect it to get a candidate, an elected official in that's going to do what he's told.
And they're not limited. They're not limited to how much they can donate either,
no,
are they?
No, they don't have to report it.
Yeah, and that's also not mentioning the overseas money that they can take. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So that's how 1% of our population and rural tribal members, and you know, in their behalf, and rural tribal members are clueless as we are. They don't know about this stuff. They just know they can't disagree with their tribal government, or they could lose their housing, or their job, or their health.
Sure.
You know, so they can't speak up.
Wow.
You know, it's the radical tribal leaders, and I don't mean this about every tribe, but I mean the big money casino tribes. Those are the culprits. Those are the ones with the big money rolling it out to our governing officials when no state or county or city can write a check out of their budget to a candidate.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that's very wrong. That's how they've acquired their political power. And we're working very hard to reverse that, but it's not reversed yet.
Well, stay on top of that, and as this thing progresses, be sure to keep us posted, and we'll have you back on. We'll talk about that because that's going to...
This is something that just flies under the radar.
It flies
under
the radar, and it's just so big that if it's allowed to get pushed through in the middle of the night, it's going to impact a lot of communities and basically break the bank.
Exactly. And this seems to be rushed through. They published the register February 8th. The first meeting in the Sonomish Reservation is February 23rd. And then they're going to have five other meetings that will be done by March 23rd. And they'll have all the input from these tribal radical leaders as to what they want done to update this 1876 beast.
Mm-hmm.
This has no application in 2017. None. But they'll get it done if we don't watch this and scream about it early on and get our elected officials to, you know, up to speed and saying, do not let this happen. You're wiping your own state out, your own county out, your own towns out.
Sure, because there are repercussions to all of these decisions.
And again, that's called the 1876,
the first Traders with Indians regulations was 1876. And it's all forms, bartering, renting, leasing, buying, permitting, any other transaction involving the acquisition or property or services.
And it's called the 1876 Trading Law or
Traders with Indians Law.
Traders with Indians Law. Okay.
Yeah,
we'll,
And the clips from the Federal Register and Elaine's explanation of what's happening and all that is all posted on the site. Also, before we sign out here in 20 seconds, the National Bison Range needs your commentary, and the lady at Fish and Wildlife Service that you need to send it to is on there. If you have any questions or issues, just get a hold of us. You can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us. And we thank you for listening, and thanks for being on with us, Elaine.
Again, it was very, very informative talk today.
Thank you so very much for letting me get this word out. You know, I sound like Chicken Little as the sky is falling, but it could fall if we don't watch this.
Thanks
a
million. Your timing was excellent.
Okay, thanks a lot, Aaron and Bob and Bill.
You bet.
Thanks, fellas. Okay, bye-bye.
See you next week, fellas.
Thanks, Elaine. This is KCNR Shasta, Redding, Florida.